You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Lewis and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Lewin along with George Kurtz. And we're bringing in Matt Modica here in a minute. Hit us up at FNTSY Radio on Twitter. We're going to break down Matt's draft that he went through last week. We'll tweet that out as well. All of us will tweet that out so you can kind of look on as we are talking about it. But, George, I would like to set up the show by saying in some ways it's a fair pronunciation. Matt tells me that both pronunciations are acceptable, but we are now changing the official pronunciation on air to Matt Modica and not Matt Modica. So I've been saying it slightly incorrectly. And I just wanted to inform the audience.
You do realize now that I'll be calling him Matt Modica from here till the end of time.
I know, because I know you're going to get confused, but I'll keep saying Modica because that's the official pronunciation. And I will welcome Matt to the show. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well today. It was great yesterday watching spring training baseball on the TV. I seen that Aaron Judge hit that moonshot yesterday. And it's been like 70 degrees in New York. I can't complain.
I know. We've been in good shape. So... George and I talked about it a little bit. As George said at the top of the show, that's what Aaron Judge is going to do. He struck out, and then he hit a bomb off the scoreboard, or George said practically over the scoreboard. So we'll see how that continues to play out. But, George, we're going to break down Matt's draft, see how he did. Matt, I'll let you set up the parameters of the draft, give us a little bit of background on it, and then we'll start to go through it a little bit.
Yes, these are NFBC auction drafts, and basically they're like prep for the big events that are coming up at the end of March. So it's 23 rounds auction and 27 rounds slow draft. I took a different approach on this one, being that it was my first auction. I'm usually a guy that spends about 110 to 115 on starting pitching. This is probably the cheapest I've ever gone on pitching. I think I spent like $90. But I had a plan that I wanted a certain select of outfielders that I just wanted a roster on one team. And being that it was my first auction, I had that opportunity to do it. And that I did wind up getting. But one of the players did punt power, so that kind of skews thing. And the starting pitching went for a premium in this auction.
So 15 teams, right?
Correct.
Okay, so 15 teams. Standard number of positions, right?
Five by five.
All right, so 5x5 and standard kind of scoring setup. But as Matt said, 23 rounds of auction, 27. Slow draft. I'm sure it's going pretty slow right now as it creeps along here the next couple of weeks. But ultimately, we'll take a look at your team first. I think you talking about a player named KJ Duke, punting power. We'll talk about him a little bit, but give us an idea. So your strategy going in was you wanted to, what did you want to ensure yourself of getting?
Usually what I've found in auctions for me, it's best to buy pitching early. There's going to be one or two aces that'll go a dollar or two below. And I kind of held back a little, and I was buying my outfielders early. So, but I got to the point where I did say I wanted either Cueto and Darvish or Archer and Carrasco as my foundation. I did pay up for Archer, for Darvish and Cueto, but I was very happy for $58 for that to be my foundation. Those are my number 7 and 8 starting pitchers that I have ranked this season.
So, George, you're seeing the link. I think you're seeing some of the players. Anything jump out on Matt's team initially? It's a player that you like, player you didn't like? I will say that he put his money where his mouth is with Cam Bedrosian. He's talked about him every single week on the show.
Okay, let me say this overall. This is for the listeners out there. It has nothing to do with Matt's draft. Talking about one auction will not help fantasy players whatsoever. You need talk about many, many auctions to get an idea. Talking about one is just talking about an auction. You're not breaking down anything. When a player gets thrown out, changes everything about an auction. You know, there's so many different strategies. I'm more interested in listening to what Matt's strategy was than anything else. Who he's on his team, don't really care. Yeah, because there's so many things that'll change things. If 10 first basemen were thrown out, then first basemen later might have gone cheaper than they should have.
True.
That, I mean, everything's thrown in context of when someone gets thrown out. So I don't really care about any of that, and neither really should any fantasy player. When you're looking at your your mock drafts or your ADPs of an auction, you want to get as many auctions as you possibly can to get an accurate reflection of what player prices are. It's so much different than a standard draft, your regular up and down draft.
Snake
it's just
draft,
completely
yeah.
different.
Yep.
So you got to be very careful with this when you're talking about a player in Matt's league made for $20, and every other draft he'll be going for $8. It matters when he gets thrown out. It also matters who needed what. But I'm more interested about what he said about what he really spends on pitching. That I find interesting. That's something you should be, because there's so many different ways you can go. We don't really see it anymore, but I've known guys who have done 251-9. 251 on hitters, nine $1 pitchers, see how it goes. It's so many different strategies. That's what I find more interesting than anything else.
Yes, that's correct, George. And just to give everybody listening a roundabout feel, these auctions that they do are kind of tracked. Todd Zola keeps a spreadsheet of them. Andy Saxton runs them. And like a guy like Noah Syndergaard, who went for $38 in this auction. I mean, I even went as high as 36. I had no plans on doing that, but pitching was just going at a premium. He went for 38. Entering this auction, his average auction value was 30.6. So he shot up. I mean, Chris Sale went for $37. And actually, a bargain was Max Scherzer, due to that knuckle news, was bought for $34.
Right. So to your point, to George's point, it really is a matter of when guys get thrown out. As he said, if there's a run on first baseman, people just keep throwing him out. It throws the values off. So we can't say that. Just be prepared that Noah Syndergaard is going to be $38 in your auction draft. He might be 30.6. is exactly what George is saying. But talking about your strategy in particular players, I mean, a guy that you and I talked about just before he got on air was Yu Darvish. Obviously, there's some health concerns there, but you're bullish on him. You have him ranked as your number seventh pitcher, correct?
This is correct. I think last season he pitched 100 innings. The way that the Rangers have handled Darvish coming back from the Tommy John, I think has been well planned out. I believe he's only got another year in Texas or so on his contract. So Texas is a win-now team. Darvish isn't a young, up-and-coming pitcher. He's going to be out there every fifth day. If he gets hurt, that's the chance I'm taking. But, I mean, I could find a wart with pretty much every pitcher. I could find an excuse not to either draft or buy pretty much the majority of the starting pitchers out there. So I think he's a top-flight pitcher. And I did pair him with Johnny Cueto, who, what he lacks in maybe some upside, he gives you in spades in security and stability.
George, thoughts on Darvish?
I think you're crazy to take him number seven overall at pitcher. I have no problems with Darvish. I'm not taking him at seven. I think what Matt said is correct. I can find a reason to not take every pitcher. All right, they all have warts of some sort. The human body's just not meant to throw overhand. So why do I want to add to that by taking somebody who already has other problems? I do think Texas is a win-now team, so I agree with that. I think he's going to pitch, but I can find 10 of the pitchers I'd rather have above him. That being said, I have him at number 12, so we're sort of splitting hairs here. I just don't see – you think top seven, I mean, off the top of my head, Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber, Price, Syndergaard –
Thor. Yeah.
Syndergaard.
Yeah. Sorry.
Lester, Cueto, Carrasco, I like above him. So he'd be right in the Strasburg range. I think
but honestly,
he'd be a little higher.
Like Carlos Carrasco. I love Carrasco. I believe in his upside. He's another guy. He's never pitched 200 innings. So, I mean, I know his injuries last year was a groin and another fluke injury, but he's a guy that's never done the 200 innings. So, I mean, you can make the argument, John Lester. I totally get that. Lester this season, I mean, last year was an awesome season for him. But he had like a 254 BABIP, which was one of his, if it wasn't a career low, it was his second. An 85% left on base percentage. That ERA is probably going to go up about a run. So, and that's still good. I still like John Lester. I have no problem taking him. But like I said, my strategy was, I want a top-end talent in Darvish, who, even if he gives me 180 innings, that's probably like 215 strikeouts. Johnny Cueto is 215 innings every year. So if I only get the 185 strikeouts from him, I've paired that off, and I'm trying to balance risk and reward.
To compare the numbers a little bit, NFBC average draft rankings for starting pitchers right now as listed. Kershaw 1, Scherzer 2, Bumgarner 3, Syndergaard 4, Sale 5, Kluber 6, Arrieta 7. Darvish 8, Lester 9, Verlander, then Cueto at 11, Price, Archer, Strasburg, then Carrasco at 15, according to these rankings, Kyle Hendricks and Carlos Martinez after that. And we'll get into those guys in a minute. So, as I said, George, somewhat splitting hairs, but, you know, you're firm in saying that you're going to take some other guys in front of Darvish.
Yeah, I mean, there's other reasons to it as well. Darvish does pitch in Texas, travels there. Not the easiest division with us. A couple other good teams there. A lot of starts against tougher teams. And coming off TJ surgery, I know it's a couple of years down now, but I want to see more from him before I wouldn't have a number seven. Number seven means he's your ace. That's where I come down. To me, he's an SP2, which is where that's why I have a 12. I like him. I would draft him on my team. I'm not saying stay away from him. So, you know, listen, it's our job. Sometimes we have to make our points here. I have an SP2. Matt has him as an SP1. We're different by four slots.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways, it's why we're even talking about this. It's pretty much the same area. It's drafting somebody number 4 overall and number 9 overall. It's difference of your opinion. There's nothing I would ever, you know, if Matt did this, I wouldn't be getting up on a soapbox going, you can't do that. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I already said I would take the guy. No problem with them. But I just wouldn't have a number 7 overall, guys I trust more. But once again, I think to Matt's point, every pitcher has a problem. All these guys you mentioned, this is why we say generally you draft hitters more than pitchers, because hitters, for the most part, don't get hurt. Pitchers do.
Yeah. One guy that Matt and I mentioned briefly before we got on air, and if somebody you missed out on, seemed like you really liked him at this point in the auction. Obviously, it matters when it was thrown out. But it was Kyle Hendricks. You lost out on him in a little bit of a bidding war. Your thoughts, George, I'll go to you first. Your thoughts on Kyle Hendricks for this season, as I just went through. He's 16th currently on the NFBC average draft positions for starting pitchers.
He falls into, this is me personally, my one-year wonder, guys. Had one good year, do it again before I start drafting you high. Once again, would not mind having him on my team, but odds are I won't have him on any team, because he'll go earlier than I'm willing to trust him right now. So many good pitches of his in his tier that I'll go with, because I can look on the back, I was going to say back of their baseball card, but I guess that shows my age, so I can look online and see their stats. I like guys who I can automatically pencil in what they're going to do. You know, and with Hendricks, I'm not quite there yet. You know, it's sort of like taking Trey Turner in the second round. I can't do that yet. Not until I see him do it again, you know, where I can trust him more. Hendricks is where that's where I'm at with him. Once he does it again this year, I'll feel better about drafting him higher next year. I'm in the second of the Roto Experts mock draft that we're doing right now. By the way, moving much quicker than the first one. Thank God. So that's what my problem is there with Hendricks. I really don't have any issues with him, but I need to see him do it again. He won't be on any of my teams.
So, I mean, this is age 27 season, so he's not young like somebody like Thor is, but he's not an aging pitcher, right? So George's one-year wonder point could be true, but maybe it just took him a couple extra years to come into his own. He didn't break in until he was 24, which isn't ancient, but still, we're now in, it's going to be his fourth MLB season. And so your thoughts really on Hendricks, and do you like him more than George, it seems?
What I like about Kyle Hendricks this season and why I've been targeting him so much, I think he's a secure pitcher. He's not a flashy guy, but I like him as a number two. I don't expect a 2.13 ERA. The ERA I'm looking at this season is probably about 3.30-ish. I think that's fair to say. The only difference in the last 2 years, really, is his left on base percentage and his BABIP. He's been basically the same pitcher. And as we had a spirited debate the other day with Corey Parsons, if you look at his FIP has been consistent, 336, 320. I think he's that type of a pitcher. So if I did wait on pitching, or if my first guy is, say, a Chris Archer, and I know he's a 200-inning, 200 and, say, 15 strikeout guy, and I pair him with a Kyle Hendricks, that's my thought process going in. I think his team plays great defense. they're not going to be as good defensively as they were last year. That was just superb. But Hendricks is a guy who I think is going to give me 200 innings, anywhere from, like, say, 170 to 175 strikeouts, a 330-ish, say, ERA, and a, like a 115-ish whip.
Good. Okay, so it's a little bit on Kyle Hendricks. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll get back to the business of breaking down this NFBC auction draft with Mike, George, and Matt coming back in a couple of minutes. Back to talk a little bit more to Matt Modica about his NFBC auction draft, 23-round draft, 27-round slow draft, which continues, but we're talking about the auction part today. And, George, another player that Matt put his money where his mouth is was Cam Bedrosian. Got him for $6, but he's talked at length. We talked about Cam Bedrosian a little bit last week, as we did with Adam Ottavino. So give me just quick thoughts on those two players, George, Bedrosian and Ottavino.
Well, I'm a big believer in I don't like at the end of my draft, playing the end game. I don't like taking SPP, you know, a team's fifth starter if they're not so good. I like taking setup men. You know, especially setup men who I think are going to close eventually. You know, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground here. We all know this, especially in expert drafts. But so I like taking guys like Bedrosian, you know, a guy who's a top setup guy who I think is going to get some saves eventually. Let's say Bedrosian doesn't get any. You know, Houston Street miraculously holds that job all year long. Well, Bedrosian will still protect my whip. He'll still protect my ERA. And I like that. Rather than somebody take, you know, a fifth starter on a team who's going to blow up my whip, blow up my ERA, sure, they'll get more strikeouts, theoretically more wins, but maybe, you know, that's an offset there. I'd rather take the upside of Bedrosian, protect my whip, protect my ERA, and I think he's going to get some saves. I think he'll get at least 12 to 15 saves by the time the year is over. I want that. You know, and that would allow me, if I drafted correctly, maybe I only need to draft two closers. You know, and it saves me, in Matt's case, save me some cash, save me some salary cap. You know, so it's a different direction I can go there. It all depends on what your belief is. But I like drafting guys like Bedrosian. I've done it for years. That rather than take, you know that stupid fifth start and spend $11 on him early in the draft, I could take one or two setup men, maybe cover myself with saves, save some money for the hitters later. That's what I believe in. So I love what Matt did with Bedrosian, and Ottavino for that matter as well.
Any differing thoughts there?
No, I'm with George. I think both of them are going to be closers for the teams. I just think Houston Street was done last year. My concern is Mike Socia. He's a veteran. He loves veterans. But I just think the talent will win out in this one. So that was the plan after I got Cueto and Darvish, was get cheap closers. I got Andrew Miller the next day. Terry Francona said that Cody Allen was going to be the closer. But I still think Andrew Miller is going to get saves. I think Andrew Miller is going to strike out over 100 batters again this year. So that was my thinking with the closing position.
Plus, Cam Bedrosian's dad got it done. So why can't Cam get it done over the long haul? So we'll pivot over to a couple, George, your favorite position. And that's catcher.
Catcher. Hate him.
You end up with, Matt, and I'll let you speak to it, the position specifically, Yasmani Grandal and Austin Hedges. So, granted, it's all, this isn't, again, we're talking about an auction draft.
Apparently, Matt hates him too.
Yeah, you didn't exactly go after our top ranked catchers here. So, give me some thoughts on Grandal and Hedges.
Yeah, I do hate drafting or buying catchers and closers for that matter too, for the most part. But Yasmani Grandal is a guy I've drafted for the last two seasons. The batting average is going to be a drain, but he's going to hit you 20-plus home runs. As long as he's healthy, love his profile. I really like the Dodgers team. And the other guy was Austin Hedges. He's been talked about for the past couple of seasons. I know he played in the PCL last year. He had a crazy good stretch run there, but he should be the catcher for them every day. So my second guy, I'm getting the at-bats, and hopefully that one works out. But I do like Yasmani Grandal.
So Grandal ranks currently eighth in the NFBC average draft position at catcher, behind Posey, Sanchez, Lucroy, Contreras, Gattis, Realmuto, and Perez. So George, I know you hate talking about catchers, but I'm going to make you talk about Yasmani Grandal.
It's not that I hate Austin talking about catchers.
Yeah,
I don't hate talking about catchers at all. I hate
drafting
the
them. Yeah, you hate drafting them. So, yeah, go ahead.
My reasoning is simple. They get hurt. They don't play every day. So I am not spending a high pick on a catcher. That's never going to happen. An auction is different because, once again, I may be able to get a catcher that I normally wouldn't draft. Right now, in that mock draft, we're in round 12. I don't have a catcher, and I'm in no rush to get one. We'll see what happens there. So, but in an auction, maybe these catchers come at a good price, and I do get one earlier than I expected. Maybe I get one for $8, $9. You never know. So I could, in an auction, I have a better chance of getting a catcher I like or that other people would have drafted earlier than in a snake draft. That's just the way it is. But the reason I don't draft them is they generally going to get one day off a week. So that's 26 games you're losing there. They get hit with foul balls. They get hit with bats. They still get hit with runners, though, regardless of what the what baseball is trying to do. They have to squat a million times. They're just going to get hurt. And even if they don't miss games, they're banged up where they can't hit. I'm going to take that outfielder. I'm going to take that starting pitcher, that first base, and I'm just going to take it over catchers almost every time. You know, it's rare that I can justify to myself to take a catcher. You know, and they also last longer. You know, when I say I'm in round 12 and I haven't taken a catcher, I'm not the only one, because I'm looking at the catchers that are still available. There are plenty of names here. McCann's still available, Russell Martin, Matt Wieters. There are plenty of catchers I can still grab you if I wanted one. So catchers are not flying off the board in this draft. Buster Posey lasted until round 7, and I almost took him because I thought the value was getting there. Well, okay, maybe I do have to take a catcher first hand, change my strategy, but Scott Engel ended up taking you at the either at the end of round 6 or top of round 7.
What was the budget?
So that's again? The way my theory of catchers.
Sorry, George. What was the budget again, Matt?
The budget's 260.
Okay, so it was 260. So it just gives people some thoughts. The only catchers, and it's all relative again, but the only three catchers where there was any kind of significant spend were Posey at $25, LaCroix at $23, and Sanchez at $20. That's really the only guys that people went up and spent a little bit for. You bought Yasmani Grandal for $12, but considering the size of your budget, that's really not much. You just tried to lock somebody in at this point. You got Hedges for $3, so you're only dedicating a very small percentage of your entire budget to the position entirely.
Yes, that's correct. If I was going to pay up, I would have paid up for Jonathan Lucroy. Being in Texas, that lineup, I really like Lucroy this year. I do love Posey. I think he's a solid, solid player. I kind of wish the Giants would move him to first base, throw Brandon Belt in left field, and see what they can do with the catcher position.
Just extend his career, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, his bat is... Last season, I believe he was very banged up. That was one of the reasons. But like George says, the catcher position is very demanding. They're going to get hurt. So that's why I, as well, will rarely ever draft a catcher high.
I mean, just to give you an idea, Posey's numbers last year, 288. He played 146 games. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about these guys getting days off. I mean, and granted, he's not going to knock out 162 games, but for a catcher like him, because they need his bat so much, they got to put him in the lineup as often as they can. And he played 146 games.
Well, when
total.
You say 146, remember, that could be pinch hitting a game here or there.
True, true.
How many starts did he have?
Yeah, that's a good point. He had 614 plate appearances. I mean, he was in the lineup a lot, but obviously produced, again, All-Star Gold Glove, 14th in the MVP voting, so people throwing in some votes on him. But in any event... you know, we all like Buster Posey as a player, but to George's point, we're sacrificing his talent because of the position that he plays. I think you're right. Everybody would want him moved. So to continue down through your squad here, you got Andrew Miller, whom we all like. And as you said, Francona has come out and said that Cody Allen has the job. Andrew Miller's not going to be the saves guy. You still think Miller could rack up some saves here. Not necessarily that Allen's going to falter and lose the job, but Miller could be in there at the end of some games and obviously protect some of your other numbers.
That's correct. I do believe all that. He gets 100 strikeouts every season. If I would have heard that the day before this auction happened, I might not have spent $11 on Miller. But at that point, I wanted a guy that could... My thinking when I was going for him was, I'm going to get possibly like 10 to 12 saves, 100 strikeouts. I mean, his ERA has been like, what, 2-2, 1.50. So, I mean, all my ratios are going to be fantastic. So, that was the thinking. unfortunately, the next day. But I still believe Miller's going to be... The guy that I was really happy to get, believe it or not, was Ervin Santana. Nobody ever wants him. Everybody laughs at him, but pretty much over the last five seasons, he's going to give you 180 innings pitched. He's only had one season over four ERA, and that's very valuable, especially with the current state of pitching. The starting pitcher average, earned run average last season was 434. So if you get a guy that's giving you 388 and 185 innings, that is not bad.
George, thoughts on Ervin Santana?
Roster filler. I mean, not someone I'm dying to get here. I mean, he's, like I said, an SP4, SP5. He's the kind of guy where I'd probably rather have that top setup man over him. There's not much upside there. Had a very good year last year when you look at the numbers here, although the strikeouts were down. What's he giving you? I mean, of the five categories you're going to need to hit for pitching, obviously he's not getting saves. The whip, ERA are solid, but nothing that's going to get you. Wins aren't there. Strikeouts really aren't there. Like I said, what's the upside? You know, I'd rather have that setup. I mean, it's the kind of guy I'd rather have a Bedrosian over. You know, he's a decent guy. He's not going to hurt you, but not really going to help you either. Roster filler.
But what I will say about this, the other aspect of this, there's no in-season pickups, and you need to have innings. Like everybody, do I want Ervin Santana? In a perfect world, I'd rather draft, you know, Lucas Giolito or something like that. Go for the upside kid that maybe comes up and kills it. But the guys I did take with the $2 and so like a Zach Davies, from June on last year, pinpoint control, he's going to pitch in that Brewers rotation. Unless he's god-awful, he's going to pitch. He's a guy that I think could be a solid, not spectacular arm. But you do need to fill arms. Everybody wants these high upside guys, which I do. I think Robert Gsellman has that opportunity. Zach Wheeler, once again, coming into camp. I mean, what can we really expect from Zach Wheeler right now? So that's my philosophy, and the same with Daniel Norris. A kid the last 2 months really turned it on, top draft pick, but has been injured. So can he be durable?
George, thoughts on some of those guys that Matt threw out?
Well, I like those guys a lot. The Mets, you know, everybody thinks of the big names for the Mets, but my God, they're all put together with scotch tape. I mean, every single one of them, with the exception of maybe Syndergaard, but even he's had bone spur issues. DeGrom's coming back, go surgery. Harvey, we know his story. Zach Wheeler, I mean, who knows what you're going to get from Zach Wheeler? It's hard to believe that Bartolo Colon was the Iron Man. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Last year of this staff. I like Gsellman a lot. I think he's going to get his chance. I can't see how he doesn't, because there's no way the five starters there for the Mets, the five big names, are all going to last. No way.
You phrased it perfectly, George. The one thing I can almost guarantee is that they're not all going to work out, right?
Exactly.
No, guaranteed. That's for most teams.
Yeah, guaranteed one or two of these guys won't work out for the long haul. You know, somebody will be in and out of the lineup.
Is Wheeler even going to be ready to start the season?
I think Wheeler's going to kind of, they're going to have kid gloves on him. I mean, possibly he's the, like, seventh inning guy.
That's
maybe.
What I was
That's
just about
to say.
That's
how they work him in. Of course, I do think there's a lot of talent in Wheeler, but what's the situation? It's been like 2 years.
I don't think that's going to happen. He's not going to be the seventh inning guy.
I just wonder if that would mess with his mindset. Yeah. Go ahead, George.
The mindset, you can't have Wheeler not knowing when he's going to pitch. I wonder if he's going to be Matt Harvey's caddy, where he's going to pitch every fifth day just like Matt Harvey does. You know, they're going to do that thing where Harvey goes five innings, he goes three. That's extremely difficult to do, because you're messing with the bullpen, you're messing with the games, because he has to pitch those days to get his arms speed up. I wonder if the best thing for Zach Wheeler is to start, you know, in what a warm weather spring, you know, extended spring training. You know, keep him down in Port St. Lucie. Let him build up the arm strength. Let him build up the elbow. He's going to have to get over elbow soreness. That's going to come about. It always does. And then you bring him back up to the Mets when he's ready to pitch every fifth day. And let's say mid-May. Yeah, I wonder if that's the best thing for the organization. But the bottom line is, everything we're talking about could be the solution. Maybe the solution is to be a reliever for a while. Maybe it is to be Matt Harvey's caddy. Maybe it is to be
I kinda like the Matt
down in Port St. Louis.
I kind of like that idea. the Matt Harvey.
That's so hard to do for Terry Collins. Because remember, he has to pitch. What if Harvey is rocking that day? Do you still take Harvey back? I mean, is Harvey going to be able to accept that? You know, his agent's going to blow up over this. You know, so that's going to be
a problem.
You're
just going to take the gloves off Matt Harvey and just throw him out there for 35 starts or whatever the hell it is and just hope he stays healthy? Like, so...
Listen, no matter what the Mets do, it'll be the wrong thing. When it comes to their medical staff, it just hasn't worked out.
That is true, George. Yes. That is very true.
Yeah,
as a Met fan, I've unfortunately lived that.
Yeah, we'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about this. It's Mike, Matt, and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Back talking a little bit about that Met staff as we were talking before the break. So I'll ask you, Matt, what do you see? Are you just having Gesellman wait in the wings, or you think he could have an impact earlier in the season? Obviously, there's questions that need to be answered. I'm not asking you to be clairvoyant, but you know, we really don't know what the Zach Wheeler is such a question mark. We really don't know what's going to happen. So do you have expectations for him early, or is this really about I'm going to play Gesellman from June to the rest of the season?
I'm thinking Gesellman is going to get the first crack in the rotation when the season starts. Kind of thinking what George said makes tons of sense. That's the path the Mets should probably go down with Wheeler. Start him in extended spring training, give him some minor league starts, and if all is good, then that's a good problem to have. But I think Gesellman's a guy that's going to get the first crack, unless he has a horrible spring training. In the first round of the draft, I took Eduardo Rodriguez of the Red Sox. Of course, there's obviously I have question marks at the back end of this rotation, and you do need to fill arms, but you have to go for the upside. And I think Robert Gesellman offers the upside.
Makes sense, George?
Oh, yeah. I have no problem with that. Eduardo Rodriguez, man, he's a guy I'm going to go down with the ship with on him. I have to make a decision on keeping him in two keeper leagues. I don't believe he's going to start the season in Boston. He has options left, and I think he's going to be the odd man out there. He could be another guy who's more valuable in mid-May than he is now. But as far as Gesellman, I agree. That's it. It's a great problem for the Mets to have. But anyone who thinks that, the five big names are all going to start, make 30 starts, you're smoking the good stuff. Not going to happen. Gesellman has value.
Yeah, I agree. We've seen this movie too many times with the Mets, and we can absolutely blame them if we want, but at the same time, what are you supposed to do with Matt Harvey? It's not like they haven't been careful with him. In some respects, people thought they were
being careful doesn't work.
Right. I was just about to say, in some respects, people thought they were being too careful with him. But in any event, Gesellman is considering he spent a buck on him, certainly a guy that you might want. So let's turn the page a little bit over to some of your hitters that you have here. I want to go through some of them. At second base, you have Jason Kipnis, obviously a guy that, you know, he went for a pretty reasonable value here. So your thoughts, George, I'll go to you first on Jason Kipnis for this season.
Listen, I have no problem with Kipnis. No problem at all. I kind of like Kipnis. What I've noticed as second baseman is that I know in this mock draft I got Altuve in the first round. I forget who I got in the other mock, but I took a second baseman early. And, man, guys like Kipnis were available so late. Once again, I'm talking snake draft. Auction all depends on price. So that's one thing I've noticed here. Second base is deeper than I expect. And like I said, we're in round 12, 12-team league. Pedroia is still on the board. So you can wait on second baseman if you want and still get a decent second baseman. Load up on your pitchers, load up on your outfields, corner infields, whatever you want to do. That's the one thing I'm noticing here. Second base, deeper than I expected.
George, you said you got Altuve. What pick was that?
1-4. I got him at fourth overall, but was very happy to do that. In this draft, Trout went 1, Betts went 2. I'd have to look to see who went 3. But I know I had the fourth pick, and Arenado went 3. And I was going to take him 4. I thought Altuve would go 3. So I would have taken Arenado if I didn't get Altuve.
Okay, your first baseman, CJ Cron. So your thoughts here, Matt.
CJ Cron was not my first, second, or third option. Wanted Tommy Joseph. Just missed out on him by a buck. I was even willing to settle on Brandon Belt. That didn't work out. So what I did get was CJ Cron. Albert Pujols is just getting older. He should be the DH. Does Luis Valbuena take CJ Cron's job? I'm going to say no, but we'll see. In the second round of the draft, I did take Steve Pierce, who I believe in Toronto is going to have he's going to have a nice little role there, I think. They're going to play him in some outfield, some first base. So that was my thinking. It really wasn't a guy. I don't hate CJ Cron. Let's get that correct.
But that's always a hugely glaring, optimistic viewpoint of a player. I don't hate him.
I don't hate him.
I'm just going to start him at first base.
But you have to look at how I constructed my team. I spent my money in the outfield. That was the game plan. Like I said, these were guys that I've been targeting. I wanted them on the same team. And the way I was able to fill my middle infield, Gene Segura is a guy I haven't owned. He's one of the toughest batters for me to pretty much rank this season. Of the four guys that hit 20 homers, 20 stolen bases last year and batted over 300, he's the only player not going in the first round. He's going in like the fourth round right now.
This is like Matt joined us roughly 3 weeks ago. This was like the Gene Segura show before he showed up. He's been a debate every week. We had a heated debate with George and Mike Cardano a few weeks ago. We don't have a problem with him as a player, but considering the move to Seattle and the construction of the team, we're not exactly sure how he's going to fit in, how these numbers are going to lay out for this year.
I'll say I think he's maybe, let's say he's 280. I think he could score 100 runs at the top of that lineup. That is a nice lineup. You got Cano, you got Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager. I think he's going to steal 30 bases. So that's another positive right there. Good average. If he gets 100 runs, I don't think he's hitting 20 home runs. I think he hit like 8 home runs in the final month last year. But still, he could hit 10 to 12 home runs. Seattle isn't this cavernous. It's much better for left-handed power. But it's not this cavernous place that everybody thinks that you can't hit home runs. That's a fallacy. So I got him for 16. I got Kipnis. So I knew that my corners were going to be weak. And that's why I paid $2 on Jed Jorko. He plays everywhere. And who's there? Johnny Peralta, Colton Wong. I do like Colton Wong, but he did go for a buck, I believe. I was hoping to get him in the reserve rounds.
So, George, the Segura debate continues. I'm not going to ask you to beat that dead horse because you've talked about him a lot over the last couple of weeks. But Juan Moncada at third base. Obviously part of the big deal this offseason. So, Moncada at third base. George, your thoughts on Juan Moncada?
Oh, has all the talent in the world, right? We know that. I don't think he's ready for the major leagues right now. That being said, may not be at the White Sox field. You know, don't care they left Fenway. I mean, once again, Cellular Field or whatever they're calling it nowadays is, if not the best ballpark to hit in the American League, it's certainly one of them.
Guaranteed
so
rate field.
There.
Guaranteed rate field, George.
Is that what it's called, really?
Yeah, we do.
Guaranteed?
I Googled it last week, I think, on air. It's guaranteed rate field.
Oh,
it's as of this year.
I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm going to call Comiskey.
Do that. That's fine. So, new Comiskey.
New Comiskey is fine with me. I mean, I think he's going to start a AAA to open the season until he proves himself ready. So how long that is anyone's guess here. I think he's going to be a very good player eventually. Just don't know when eventually is. Rather have him in a keeper or a dynasty league somewhere like there. Unfortunately, I don't in any of those leagues. But I do like his future more than his present.
But to your point, there's no midseason pickups here, so this is somebody that you kind of had to position yourself to get.
Yes, Moncada is somebody I've taken in the majority of my drafts this season in the high teens. He's a gamble guy that I think will pay off. Chicago's got to play him at some point. They're going to be god-awful. I think they're going to continue to sell. I think Todd Frazier gets traded. Maybe at the deadline, a team that suffers an injury, even Jose Abreu could go. They're a rebuilding team. They're playing in the same city as the Cubs. People are going to want to see Moncada, going to want to see Giolito. I have the next pick in the 26th round. I will be selecting Adonis Garcia. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants him. But he should be the starting third baseman for the Atlanta Braves, a team that I think is going to be much better than people think. So I will slot him in. I agree with George. Maybe he spends the first month in the minor leagues. Like, you save, if you keep the guy down for the first month, you save X amount of days. At worst, he's up by June. And I got a guy like Jerko who I could put everywhere as well.
Yeah, they're just playing the option game with Moncada by putting him down. So we'll get back to Matt's outfield after this. We can talk about Raul Mondesi, but we really want to talk about his outfield because it's impressive. Mike, George, and Matt back after this. This is Kyle Hendricks right there bringing us back in. Guy we talked about earlier. So we'll get to his outfield in a moment, George. But Raul Mondesi is who he has slotted in as a middle infielder right now. Your thoughts on Raul Mondesi for this year? Played somewhat sparingly last year, but, you know, he appeared in 47 games. So got a very small sample size, though. Very young player. Your thoughts about Raul Mondesi, George?
Well, first, Greg Sussman just took Yasmani Grandal in that Roto Experts mock league, so I guess I won't be grabbing him after all.
Well, he's probably listening. Screwed you.
Yeah, yeah. That
nice job, Greg.
Bastard.
Nice job, Greg.
Wow, that just hurts.
I'm just saying.
No one's rooting for me. That's fine.
Get used to
Screw
it.
Screw yous all.
Get used to it.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Mondesi, listen, he's in it. Well, first of all, is he going to win the job? And he's got to do that first. We all know what his value is going to be. And when he reaches the majors, I think his average is probably going to hurt you. Speed is really what you're looking for there. Not much power to root for there. I don't see the big deal. I truly don't. I think if he develops into a hitter, that ballpark could be huge for him. Hit the gaps and run. And it's really what you want to do there. The power in Kauffman Stadium. I think it's still Kauffman Stadium. Is not really something that's going to be going to play to his strengths at all. It's all about speed.
I totally agree. He's the speed guy. That's why I took him. I think he wins the job. If he doesn't win the job, he's a guy that in a redraft league, he should be on your watch list. You know, second week of May, he could be up. If the Royals do not play well the first couple of months, there's going to be a fire sale going on in KC with all the impending free agents they have. So I think he's going to have plenty of opportunity this season. So that was my thinking there. Take the high upside speed guy, and I could fill in somebody as, you know, for the first 6 weeks or so.
We'll talk about the outfield and then fill in a couple of the other players. Because, George, this is where Matt focused his money on. And I don't think you can say anything too negatively about any of these players in particular.
Sure I can. Give me a shot.
Okay. Starling Marte.
Pittsburgh doesn't hit home runs.
Okay.
See? I can do it.
Okay. Giancarlo Stanton.
Gets hurt all the time. Easy. Come on. Give me something hard here.
That one's easy. Nelson Cruz. He's old. That's what you're going to say.
Old. Yeah, he's old. Right. Downside. No. In all honesty, I love all three of these players. Giancarlo Stanton. How much did you pay for him?
I paid $29. I paid a couple of dollars more, but I had the philosophy at that point. I wanted to spend $50 between him and Nelson Cruz. I think I spent $52. So
that's good. That's good.
Yeah, Cruz for $23.
Yeah.
I love Cruz for $23.
Yeah.
I love that a lot. I think Stanton in most snake draft leagues going about round three. He is probably the biggest boomer bust player we're going to have. He plays 142 plus games. That's boom. What's he going to hit? 40 home runs, driving 90 runs minimum. If he plays 90 games, well, there's your bust. Yeah, so he's probably the biggest boomer bust guy we have going here. This is a first round pick if he was a normal guy who plays, you know, didn't get hurt every single year. You know, stop running at the wall, stop doing awkward things. Maybe he's too muscle bound, whatever it might be. Just stay healthy and play. I mean, I'm not a Mullins fan. No one's a Mullins fan, but you know, I love watching all good baseball players play. And there's nothing like seeing him hit those moonshots. I mean, there's nothing like it.
It's awesome.
You know, so I want him to stay healthy. Biggest boomer bust there is Giancarlo Stanton in baseball this year.
He's the guy that people pay ticket prices for, right? He's the guy that people pay to see. That's Giancarlo Stanton.
I would, right?
I certainly would. Absolutely would.
The Yankees. That's what the Yankees are hoping Aaron Judge becomes.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. You know, it's not like, I mean, the Marlins are certainly invested in him for a really long time. So hopefully, as you sort of alluded, George, like, I want him to stay healthy. I want to watch this guy play. I don't, you know, I'm rooting for him.
We all, as baseball fans, should want
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
come on, man.
100%.
I know I made fun of all Mets players. I was just looking for it. I love Marte. he's a guy I would take as my my number one bottom number one outfielder, number two outfielder. I have him on several teams already. Love his talent. I do wish he would hit more home runs. But
yeah, but George,
Brock,
isn't Marte? Isn't Marte what everybody wants Trey Turner to be? Pretty much, I think everybody's paying this top first half of the first round, bottom half of the first round for Turner. And Marte's the
Not
guy
me.
In the second round. Yeah, me neither. That's why I've been taking Marte.
Yeah, I'll take Marte over Turner right now. Even though I think Turner is going to be a star, he needs to do it against me for really to really vault him up there. Marte, I know what he's going to do, right? You know he's going to run. His average is going to be there. The only thing he's not is the home runs, and that's a combination of probably more PNC than anything else. But I love Starling Marte, so I don't want anyone to think I was down on him when I was playing a little game here of making fun of everybody.
Again, it's all relative. But Trey Turner went for $35 and Starling Marte went for $30. And I think, you know, just at face value.
I'll save the $5.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you wholeheartedly. Matt, do you have any reservations about having two Pittsburgh outfielders? No.
Not really.
Because he also drafted Gregory Polanco.
Oh, Polanco, I tweeted actually yesterday. I think he's like the 63rd player off the board in NFBC drafts. 1 month from now, he'll be going anywhere from mid to late third, early fourth at the latest. He will be a top 50 player. He's got 20/20 written all over him. The batted ball profile, the line drive rate going up every season. He's a guy, I think he was banged up in that second half. If he gives you, you know, 280, 275, 20-plus homers, 20-plus stolen bases, I'm all for that.
George, any reservations there or disagree or agree with the Gregory Polanco breakdown?
I have no problem with the Polanco breakdown. I think the bigger question to ask is how many players on one team is too many in a standard league?
I don't really, for baseball, not really a problem. I've heard people talk about doing a Rockies stack, which is kind of interesting because when you get those 81 home games, that's fantastic. But a lot of their players also take a step back on the road, you know, due to that whole altitude, yeah. And you know, yeah. it's a
roller coaster
gap
ride
for them too. So you have to encompass the whole thing. The Pirates, I mean, Marte's a guy, I'm not saying he's going to hit 20 home runs. I think he hits maybe 12 to 15. The fly ball percentage, if that kicks up a little, I think that's a decent range for him. I'm not buying him for the power. That's why I bought Stanton and Cruz. But I think the Marte and Polanco is a great power speed. And to add that with Kevin Kiermaier, who's going to be batting leadoff for Tampa Bay, I love Kiermaier. I think he's one of the best values in drafts. He is starting to move up. He was closer to 200. I think now he's in the 180s, and I think he goes a little higher as we continue
on. I'll throw it over to you in a sec, George, but I was going to pause and say that Kiermaier is one of those guys, as we've been talking and as I've been reading more and more, it's probably indicative of his rise in this his ADP. But he's a player that I like a lot more, and hearing you and George and others talk about him. So, again, Kevin Kiermaier is a guy that I'm probably targeting in some ways when my draft comes up. George, your thoughts on Kevin Kiermaier?
Kevin Kiermaier. Most leagues, he's going to go late. Once again, I know Matt's league is a deeper league than most of our standard leagues. Don't mind him. Not somebody I'm necessarily targeting. But at that point in the draft, I don't know if we were really targeting anybody. You look at Phil Need, so he's going to be a need guy for me. You know, and what I like about him is, in a lot of leagues, I don't necessarily draft speed. Not purposely. It may work out that way where I draft some guys who have speed. Like if I draft the Marte, I wasn't really drafting him for a speed. I was drafting him second round, drafting the player more than a category guy. But if I don't have him, later on in my draft, I'm going to need speed. You know, and I like that the fact that Kiermaier, get him late. And he's probably going to steal 20 bases. I understand that he might come with an average hit. We're not going to fix that. But that's what I like about Kiermaier. He'd be that for me. I'm not the kind of guy you're ever going to see draft D. Gordon or Billy Hamilton in rounds, you know, 4 to 6. I'm not going to go in that direction. So I'm going to need speed guys late.
Would you draft Keon Broxton in a deeper league?
And once again, it depends on what else is on my roster here. You don't know what he's going to do. I think he's going to get a chance to play. Milwaukee doesn't have anything else. They're another one of those teams that's mailing it in this season, so they're playing for that. Yeah, I probably would, but once again, that's an average fix I'm going to have to do as well.
Yeah, so
yeah, he's a total lottery ticket guy. I mean, yeah. For $3, power, speed, and like you said, he's going to play. He's going to get every opportunity to fail, put it that way.
Exactly. So that's it. We broke down Matt's team. We'll talk a little bit more about this draft, some interesting goings-on. We got 1 hour to go. We're here till 10 o'clock. It's Matt, Mike, and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're back after this.